I'd like to share with you the story of Frog and Toad Together, The Garden. It's by Arnold Lobel. Frog was in his garden one day, and Toad walked by, and he said, "What a very fine garden you have, Frog." Frog said, "Thank you, but it was a lot of hard work." Toad said, "I wish I had a garden." "Well, here are some flower seeds," said Frog. "Plant them in the ground, and soon you will have seeds." "How soon?" said Toad. "Quite soon," said Frog. So Toad went home, and he planted the seeds. "Now, seeds," said Toad, "start growing." Toad walked up and down the rows. The seeds did not start to grow. Toad put his head down very close to the ground and said, "Okay, seeds, start growing." Toad looked down at the ground again, but the seeds did not seem to be growing. Toad put his head very close to the ground this time, and he shouted very loudly, "Seeds, start growing!" Frog came running up the path. "What's all this noise?" We probably came hopping up the path. "What's all the noise?" he asked. "My seeds will not grow," said Toad. "You're shouting too much, Toad. Your poor seeds are afraid to grow," said Frog. "My seeds are afraid to grow?" said Toad. "Of course they are," said Frog. "Now leave them alone for a few days. Let the sun shine upon them. Let the rain come upon them, and they will grow." That night, Toad looked out the window. "Drat," he said, "my seeds are not growing." He said, "I bet they're afraid of the dark." So Toad took out some candles. "I will read you a story," he said to the seeds, "and you will not be afraid." And so he read them a very long story through the night. Now the next day, Toad decided he would sing songs to his seeds in the rain all day. And the next day, Toad read poems to his seeds. And the next day, he played music for his seeds. Toad looked at the ground, but the seeds did not grow. "What should I do?" said Toad with his little toady legs. "What should I do? These must be the most frightened seeds in all the world." But then Toad got very tired and he laid down and fell asleep. "Toad, Toad," Frog jostled him awake. "Wake up, look at your garden." Toad looked at his garden. Little green plants were coming up everywhere. "At last," said Toad, "my seeds have stopped being afraid and they have sprouted and started to grow." "And now," said Frog, "you have a garden too." "Yes, and you were right. It was a lot of work." Of course, in the story, Frog has this disposition of being the patient one, the wise one. He's filled with faith and experience. It's not the first time, you know, he's had many gardens, he's nurtured many gardens over time. He has faith that the seeds will grow in time. He's seen it happen before, which always buoys our faith, doesn't it, when we have those experiences. Toad, on the other hand, seeks instant gratification. He can't wait for the seeds to run their course. He wants it to happen more quickly. And Toad is new at this. And so he's willing to put in the time to learn how it all works. Like Toad, and maybe we're like Frog too, I hope so, but specifically like Toad, some of us want things to happen more quickly than they do. Well, take for example this pandemic process. We've all been trying to navigate this, and like Toad, we're new at it, right? Unless you were around in 1918, it's probably a new experience for you. And through the pandemic, it's been new for us. And now, as things are getting better and we're coming out of the pandemic, transitioning out, this too is a process. This too is new for us. We're new at all of us, and yet we're willing to put in the work. And that's what's key. And we have the resilience to see ourselves through. So in this series, we are mastering the art of uncertainty. And we've acknowledged that life is in constant change and that we have been facing that together for the last year and a half, just constant uncertainty and change, just like life, but intensified. So during this last few weeks, we've looked at what are some of the skills that we could build and utilize that really help us master this art of uncertainty, dance with uncertainty in our lives, make friends with it, be okay with it, because it's pretty much here to stay, right? That's what they say. The one thing that's constant in life is change, and the feelings of uncertainty that go with it are likely. But we can master that, and we've done that by shoring up our faith, which is what we did the first week. And the second week, we took a cue actually from the pandemic process itself, and the way that in that process, government leaders had to ask, you know, what's essential? What are the essential businesses? What are the essential workers? What needs to stay open? And what can we close down so people can stay safe and apart, unfortunately, at that point? And so we take that cue and we say, what is essential for us? What matters most in our lives, in our world, in our personal experiences? What aligns best with our values? And that's where we put our attention, that's where we invest our focus, our time, our talent, our money. It helps kind of declutter the things that aren't working for us, declutter the thoughts or the feelings in our mind that might get in the way and allow us to focus. Last week we looked at presence, the presence that is accessible in the present, in the now. So by being present with the now and entering into that infinite space, We not only access the divine presence that is everywhere, but also that infinite I am that we are in the here and the now. So today we round out our skill set with mastering the art of uncertainty with the idea of resilience. Let's start with an expert to learn a little bit more about resilience. When author Angela Duckworth was a young girl, her father often told her, she says, very frequently told her, you're no genius. So ironically, when Angela grew up, she was given the MacArthur Fellowship, which is also known as the Genius Award. It allowed her to achieve some groundbreaking research on what makes people successful. Daniel Gilbert said that psychologists have spent decades trying to answer this question, what makes people successful? And he says that Duckworth is the one who found it. Her answer? Grit. Grit, she describes, as a combination of passion and perseverance. It outweighs any other factor, even talent. And she used a bunch of different scenarios when she studied this. So she looked at the military and all kinds of really difficult academies and processes that the military go through in different sections of the military. She looked at businesses. She looked at athletes. She looked at spelling bees and many other things to determine all these ways that what was that factor that allowed the ones who were successful, the ones who ended up winning or in the end were still there. It's that stick-to-itiveness, right? It's this idea of grit that determines our success. Let's take, for example, Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. When Aretha was just 6 years old, her mother left the family. 4 years later, she made her transition. Aretha taught herself how to play the piano, and at the age of 14, she went on tour. She had some difficult times in her life, as we all do, but these were especially difficult ones. She released her big hit in 1967, her first big hit, I should say, and it was in the context of a life where she had 3 children and was the victim of domestic abuse. The song, I bet you can guess it, Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. It makes me want to start dancing and singing immediately. So if you're dancing and singing at home, and if we were filling the sanctuary like we will sometime soon, we would. But for now, this is what Aretha said. She said, I sing to the realist, the people who accept it like it is. Aretha was a high school dropout, And still, she received 12 honorary degrees. She performed at 3 presidential inaugurations. She held 44 Grammy nominations, winning 18 of those. And she was one of the most honored artists in history. She was the first female artist to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So what allowed Aretha to be so successful? Sure, she had talent, but most of all, she had grit. For some, grit is associated with life-threatening situations, the passion and perseverance simply to survive. This is true for Puk and Zi Yang. They fled their home on a small fishing boat with their 2 small children at the time, who were 4 and 1 year old. They were among 1.5 million refugees who were fleeing from Vietnam after the war in small fishing boats on choppy seas. Their boat was invaded by pirates 8 times in 8 days. They lost everything they had, all the money they had, but all 4 in the family survived. Later, after they arrived in the U.S., Puk commissioned a painting with a fishing boat bobbing precariously in that foaming sea, and emblazoned on the side is a number. That number is the number of their fishing boat. She said she invested in that painting so that they would never forget their escape, and so that her children would always know, we are boat people. When they do poorly in school, she said, when some difficulty comes upon us, we stand in front of that painting and I remind them, we are boat people. Now, whether we've been through a life-threatening situation like the Yangs went through, or are simply trying to achieve something, working towards something we are passionate about, some contribution we want to make to the world, some creation that we're working on, something that we care about passionately in service or in any kind of way, experiencing for ourselves, whatever it may be, wherever our passion lies, we can make it through. Angela Duckworth's studies have gone a step further, not just about grit, but also, are people who have more grit happier than people who don't? The answer is a resounding yes. She said grit went hand in hand with well-being, no matter how she measured it. So how do you know you have grit? Well, consider this. What goes through your head when you fall down? That is what makes all the difference. Because if what goes through your head is critical or victimizing, or you're not quick to begin to focus on how to get up, then you might still have some resilience work to do. Resilience lies in the human spirit naturally, and it's very much a journey of the heart. That's what I love about Toad so much in the story. He's all heart. You know, he brings his heart to this garden endeavor in every way. He does everything he can to help these seeds grow. And he feels for them. They're scared. He lights candles. He reads stories. He reads poems. He plays music. He sings songs. When Toad recognizes that fear is present, he responds with compassion and determination. So for many of us on our journey, we know, and at the end of our mission statement, we know we do what we do, not just to become enlightened, but to serve, right? To help others. Toad has that. He understands that innately. He has a resilient heart. So as we're poised as a community to come back together even further than we have, to take the next steps, and as we are emerging one step at a time, re-emerging back into our world and our lives, maybe never the same, but in some way, some semblance of what we call the new normal, right? It's what we've wanted. It's what we've all said we wanted. We want to be done with this pandemic. We want to be back together. We want to be reunited. And then the opportunity begins to come before us, and we say, well, maybe not quite yet. Maybe not full on. It can be a bit scary. there can be feelings of anxiety and fear and, well, guess what? Uncertainty. And that is just a part of it. So when can we do what we want to do, and when will we know what we can do? We all are sitting with that uncertainty and just allowing it to be. Resilience, grit, it helps us to be more adaptable beings and to meet life exactly as it is. Like seeds, we all maybe feel a little bit in the dark, maybe even a little bit afraid. But there's a toad in us too. There's a resilient heart in us too that can see us through to the growth, to the sprouting, to the new life that is before us. So for many of us, transitioning out of the pandemic might be as challenging as transitioning in was, and that's okay. Mastering the art of uncertainty requires a resilient heart that can remain open, that is willing to be vulnerable. We become practiced at allowing that to be when we actually use spiritual practices that are aimed at working with feelings and the heart. We become comfortable with the feeling of being uncomfortable. What do you do when you feel uncomfortable or vulnerable? You know, for a lot of us, when we've been on the journey long enough, we realize those old tactics that we might have used in the past, like numbing and addictive kinds of habits or distracting ourselves, they only work for a very short window. Maybe our troubles recede while we're eating some ice cream, but guess what? Then they're back. And so we begin to learn as we practice more and more that practicing being with our feelings can be super powerful for us, and that those old tactics that don't really serve us very well can fall away now. What is essential? Our spiritual practice, our spiritual community, our ongoing work, our ongoing journey. Getting this message out, sharing it with the world, right? We want to reunite, even where it's scary, because we want to share what we know at Unity has helped our own lives. What we know has helped us heal, has helped us transform. We want more of the world to know that. We want more of the world to know how to master the art of uncertainty. And so we keep on as a community, and we keep on individually. So when we come back to that practice, what does that look like? Pema Chodron, I like to turn to her for these kinds of practices because she's so steeped in it as a Buddhist nun. She writes, in Welcoming the Unwelcome, we can train ourselves to feel by holding the rawness of vulnerability in our hearts. With practice over time, she says, we can increase the amount of time that we are able to be with the feelings of discomfort. And you know what happens as we do that is that we begin to enter more of that infinite space. We begin to touch more of that divine presence we talked about last week. We begin to enter the infinite divine love that is available to us. It's opening up the portal of the heart that is the portal of divine love. So what does it look like when we drop in and feel, when we allow ourselves to just go in there and be with what is present? Whatever that feeling, and it doesn't really matter what it is, anger or dread or, you know, sadness, whatever that feeling is, when we go in and we look and we feel, we notice the nature of feeling. A lot like last week when we talked about, when we were looking at the nature of thought, like clouds in the sky, right? They just move and they separate and they drift apart and they fall away. And there's that vast sky of divine wisdom and intelligence available to us again. The same is true with the heart. As we look and we see, we notice that what happens is emotions just rise and fall. They drift and break apart. Sometimes they intensify, especially with anger, but then it falls away. Maybe goes to sadness, and then even sadness begins to part. But how will we know if we're constantly trying to push it away? We won't know until we practice. And when we find this nature of feelings that is so amorphous and shifting, it confirms for us that fear that we had before is unfounded, that, you know, some kind of boulder is going to be there, it's going to flatten us, or some kind of wave is going to come crashing down on us and it's never going to stop. Anybody ever feel that way? If I go into that, if I let myself feel this grief, I'll just get overwhelmed by it and I'll never get out. But the truth is, a few moments in practice with the heart can do legions of things for us in moving forward into divine love and light. There's nothing to fear here. There's only love here. We won't know until we go there. So with the spiritual practice of working with feelings and what's in our hearts, we get our nervous system accustomed to the idea of being uncomfortable. And we learn, our nervous system goes, oh, it's okay. Discomfort, uncertainty. I know this. It's okay. And so I know that it's temporary. I know that it's moving through. And that allows us to do a lot in life that maybe we wouldn't have dared do had we not gone through this portal. We get resilient about feeling our feelings, and a lot can happen for us. We move then into our vast potential because our heart is unguarded. And now we can do what is ours to do and be all that we've come here to be. So when we come in contact with this vast limitness, this limitlessness, whoa, I'm having a hard time with that one. When we enter into the wonder of spirit, we realize we are infinite. Heart Dream sings, you are infinite. Let's take a moment to just relish in this truth together as we watch the video.
Waves can't pull you down. Don't don't you know your soul can't drown? You are spirit, you are free, you are infinity.
So whether for the sake of spiritual community or our families or ourselves, we are resilient souls and we keep going. When we fall down, we get back up. When things change, we adapt. We don't let fear of failure or success or the unknown keep us small and constricted. We've all grown in resilience in the past year or so. So let's remember that we're pandemic people and have that sense of, I've been through something and we've made it through together. Some, of course, are going to bear greater scars than others, but here we are, almost fully on the other side, getting there. So let's expand and live our divinity as we master this art of uncertainty together. As we do so with a passionate resilience. Let's speak this together. I'm going to say it once and then we can say it together. I am mastering the art of uncertainty with resilience. Let's say it together. I am mastering the art of uncertainty with resilience. And so it is.